Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm all right. Well, I say I'm all right. I want to start this week with a warning, Ben.
Okay.
For anyone listening who might be sick of us ranting on about politics or might be just sick of hearing about the big story that's going around at the moment, to skip on to about 15 and a half minutes in to another topic. Okay.
Okay.
But I've been sitting on this anger for a couple of weeks now. I didn't mention it last week because I wanted to see how it was all going to pan out.
Yes.
But Partygate.
Yes. This goes back to a shared prediction that we both had for the new year. And I think it's edging ever closer.
That we'd have a new leader. I mean, it might happen sooner than we predicted.
Yeah, I mean, you say we'll have a new leader. That implies we have a leader at all at the moment.
So last week, I watched it was an apology of sorts in the House of Commons. If nobody knows what we're talking about, by the way, if you're listening to us in another country. Now, I don't know if this would be news, big news in another country. I'm assuming that other news channels in other countries are reporting this and going, look at this shower of shit that's yes. running the UK right now.
Can I clarify before we continue with this podcast?
Yeah.
Now, we don't really get paid for doing this as such, but it is a form of work for you and me, isn't it? Is it not?
Is this a tax question?
No. I just wanted to clarify. Can I describe this podcast as a work meeting?
As a work event.
A work event. Is it a work event?
It's certainly not a social gathering.
No. So I'm going to call it a work event, if that's all right with you.
Okay. It's a work event. Yeah.
Good stuff. Enough. Bear with me. Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
And the difference is I didn't send you... Oh, no, I did send you an invite to this. So the question is, does that invite count? But I haven't mentioned bring your own booze.
If it's a work event, I think it's implied, isn't it?
What, you can bring your own booze?
Yeah.
I've been working for 26 years of my life. And very rarely, I'm not saying never, but very rarely has alcohol been a part of the workday routine. It seems like in Downing Street, they're just fucking pissed all the time.
I mean, not a day goes by when I go to work and don't bring along the wife and a bottle of vodka. I mean, it's par for the course, isn't it? That's what a work event is.
Do you hide bottles of booze in people's hedges? So as you go around your route, you just dip in, have a swig of vodka, move on. You got, I don't know, you got some Zambuca in the next hedge.
Yeah, I mean, I am weighed down, but it isn't with mail. It's I'm a walking off license.
But it seems to me that they were just having parties all the fucking time. And it just,
yes.
And the one that sort of has caused the biggest row amongst all of the others, and there seems to have been a lot, but is the one on May the 20th, 2020, when an invite went out to workers in Downing Street, when the rest of the country were in strict lockdown conditions.
Yeah.
An invite that went out and said, yeah, bring your own booze. Let's make the most of the sunshine. You've all been working hard. And they went and had a massive party in the garden.
Now, can I tell you what really broke the camel's back for me?
Yeah.
It was the revelation that there was a Downing Street party the night before the funeral of Prince Philip. I feel like a frog who has been put in a pot. Mm. And the water has been increasing in temperature, and I've been brought slowly to the boil, so you get used to it.
Why are you using a frog analogy?
You must have heard the boiling a frog analogy before. It's that if you put a frog in a pot of water and slowly turn the water up, it won't panic because it'll just get used to it and acclimatise and get used to it, and it won't realise it's in trouble until it's too late. Wow, and that's very much how I feel.
And maybe that was part of their plan to just sort of get you acclimatised to the fact that they were breaking the law on a sort of massively regular basis so that in the end it wouldn't really matter and people just go, well...
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was scandal after scandal, party after party, and I was getting complacent and just thinking, oh, well, you know what? I expect nothing less of them. What's another party? Mm. Oh, well. And you know what? That's just increasing the temperature in my pot. And then all of a sudden, they turned up the temperature far too quickly, and I heard through my headphones, Number 10 Downing Street have had to apologise to the Queen for having a party the day before She sat in isolation at Prince Philip's funeral on her own. And I just thought, hang on a minute. I'm sitting in a pot of boiling water here. This has got far too hot far too quickly. They are taking the piss now.
It's just so outrageous. The level of rage that I have felt. I could have come on really ranting and raving, but it's gone beyond that. It's gone beyond that. The anger is just so... It's just part of me now. There's no sort of outburst of anger unless I start hearing. There was a couple of days ago when, so last week he turns up in the House of Commons, old Bojo, and he says, I apologize. No, here we go. Right. Thinking, oh, this is, he thinks this is going to make it all right. And then he keeps, you know, they keep saying, oh, let's wait and see what this report is going to tell us when that comes out, whenever that's going to be in the next few days or weeks, however long it's going to take for the truth to come out and whether that will actually make a difference. But then the days after, some of his own MPs were starting to talk about him going. But then he was wheeling out all of his mates, all the cabinet who have to support him because they're terrified of losing their job, you know, saying the wrong thing. I mean, Liz Truss.
Oh, God.
Liz Truss, she was on something on a few mornings after he'd apologised, and she was saying, well, I really think people just should move on now. He's apologised. And then I saw someone else on Newsnight saying, I think people are tired of hearing about this now.
No.
When there's lots to be done elsewhere.
You don't get to decide when my outrage is finished.
No.
I get to decide that. I also saw a tweet from Liz Truss saying how she stands behind Boris, and I assumed he must have started a conga line.
I mean, it's just so fucking outrageous. The thing that really annoys me, the reason people won't move on, no matter what Truss says, no matter what any other crony wheels out, I'm starting to get angry now. Because I'm going to share with you a very personal story about this. And this is why you can't move on. And I'm not alone in this. There are millions of people who went through the same sort of things. They had a party on May the 20th.
Yeah.
I buried my grandmother on the 22nd of May, 2020. So I'd lost her a couple of weeks before that. I wasn't able to go and say goodbye to her. I was able to get to a funeral for her, but so many of her family weren't able to come to that funeral and say goodbye while they're fucking partying it up, breaking the rules. So they can fucking stick moving on, because we're not moving on, because there are millions of people in the same boat as me with that story who are furious. Absolutely livid. And we feel so powerless. I think that's where the anger comes from, isn't it? You feel so fucking powerless because you've got this cretin running the country, this fucking moron. And I can't find many people now who would support him, even his biggest supporters. I was watching Question Time the other night. And I think one person put their hand up where they said, who would still support him? That's the kind of world we're in now.
You would need to ask that person what it would take to not support him anymore. If you're willing to give him a pass on all of this, what would it take? But the thing is, I can understand people feel very angry for very justified reasons. But it's important to remember, even though Boris flouted those rules, the rules were correct. The rules weren't the problem. It was the breaking of them by the man who set them that was the problem.
Yes.
So although you weren't able to go and do those things, you were still doing the right thing.
Yes, yes.
But I can understand how much that feels like you have just been just laughed at, really.
And the fact that he lies about it, that's the other thing. Like every step of the way, he's lied about it until it becomes so unbearably obvious that he's lying, that he turns up and tries some grovelling fucking apology that nobody believes, because the man blows with the wind like a flag in a hurricane. and it's just outrageous. The man should go. The problem we've got, I was thinking this the other day, how can... Let's just say, because it's 3 years to the next general election.
Jesus, that long. Oh, God.
I wonder whether he's still leader of the Tory party or not by the next general election, will people's memories go back to this? Will this still hurt? Because 3 years is a long time. Lots can happen, lots of water under the bridge. And then we get to it and we go, oh, well, no, it doesn't matter now. That's 3 years ago. And what I was thinking was, what can we do now? Because we're just stuck, aren't we? We're completely stuck. I mean, the democratic system is, I can't think of anything better than what we've got. But we don't really have any way of midway through a term like this of saying, do you know what? We should have another election now because this lot are fucking useless and we want them out. And I was looking this up. I was thinking, I wanted to start a revolution, Ben. That was what I was thinking. I thought, should we march upon Downing Street? What good would that make? They're putting through some law this week about making protesting harder. So I'd be banged up probably very quickly.
It's depressing, isn't it? So did you manage to find anything? Is there any way that just the people can oust a prime minister?
Really.
Because I don't think there is.
Not really. This is as far as I understand it from what I've found. Okay. So what can happen is a vote of no confidence or a motion of no confidence can be presented in the House of Commons. It would then need to be passed, that motion would need to be passed by a majority in the House of Commons. And then after a period of, I think it's 14 days, either an alternative government would have to be installed or a vote of confidence in the government would have had to have taken place. Otherwise, a general election has to be held. The problem you've got is you've got a party in government who hold a huge majority. So even if a number of the government's MPs didn't have confidence in Boris Johnson, they're not going to vote no confidence in the government because it's their government.
Well, that's true. And isn't also the other problem with this that it's a bit self-serving, but presumably the opposition don't actually want Boris gone. They would want him in so that by the time of the next election, he's so terrible and hated that they're a shoo-in for a victory. Because they don't want him gone and then replaced with a very competent prime minister who's then going to make life hard for them. They want to get into power, ultimately.
Well, of course. But then what you're doing there, Ben, is you're assuming that there's competent members of parliament.
the thing that really fried me as well was the apology that was given to Buckingham Palace from Number 10. They apologised and said, these things are regrettable. They shouldn't have happened. We should have done things differently.
Yeah.
And then the press, the journalists, got onto them and said, well, what things? What are you talking about? And they said, we don't want to talk about it. And it smacked to me of a naughty schoolboy with his hands in his pockets, looking at his shoes, who is saying, what have you got to say? What have you got to say? Sorry. What for? Nothing.
Yeah.
Come on. When was the last time in living... forget living memory. When was the last time in history a prime minister had to apologise to the Queen for despicable behaviour?
Well, I'll tell you this. The last time a prime minister was removed on a monarch's own authority in the UK was 1834.
Christ.
So I think there is some constitutional process. I'll read you exactly what it says, right? It says, a dismissal of a prime minister is thought to be necessary when the wishes of the legislature are different from the wishes of the nation. Now, I don't really understand what that means.
Neither do I, but it gives me some hope that if the Queen chooses to, she can get rid of this prick.
You know she has to meet with the Prime Minister on a weekly basis, whoever's
in. Yeah, once every Wednesday, isn't it?
Is it Wednesday?
I think so.
The day. I'd like to be... I'd love to be a fly on the wall this Wednesday, but I just hope that she would just lamp him. Like he'd come in. Because imagine, how awkward is that going to be this week when he turns up at Buckingham Palace and shuffles his untidy way in? I mean, do you think he tidies himself up to go to Buckingham Palace? He doesn't, does he?
Tidy himself up to address the nation, so I don't think he would bother for the Queen either, no. And he's quite happy sending Jacob Rees-Mogg to mislead her when it suits him as well.
Yeah. So he'll turn up at Buckingham Palace looking like Wurzel Gummidge has been to Eton for a term and shuffle his way into the whatever room it is.
Wurzel Gummidge.
Yeah. The fourth. Your Majesty, I'm sorry. And she's going, oh, fuck off. Just fuck off, you kind of shit and just starts, because obviously she'd have to social distance still. I'd imagine she's a vulnerable person of, you know, she's of an age where she's probably vulnerable, but maybe she could just start, like, think of the artifacts that she'd have to her disposal, like big heavy bits of gold and silver, just start throwing them at him.
Yeah, I mean, how could you hit him from a distance if you had to socially distance? I mean, would she have a big mace she could swing?
Again, I'm just thinking of, you know, she's 96 or 90, was she 95, 96? I mean, she's not going to be able to hold a big heavy mace and get the kind of action she needs on it. But if she was just to throw, like, even sort of heavy goblets, there must be like gold goblets in Buckingham Palace because they'd do some damage, and even the little old lady could get some purchase on one of those and just launch it at him.
She might need to get some help though, because as you say, she's a very elderly lady, and
she better get Andrew in, because he wouldn't work up a sweat throwing.
He's got nothing but time on his hands now.
Yeah, and he wouldn't be, you know, there'd be no sort of issue with him getting all sweaty and smelly whilst he's throwing heavy bits of silverware about. Okay, Ben, let's move on from that. Let's get into something completely different.
Okay.
I was flicking through the telly the other night, just looking for something to watch. It was a bit late, and I thought, something before I go to bed, just to see the evening out, sort of thing. And I saw that Robin Hood was on the telly, the film starring Russell Crowe, which I've never seen before.
Okay, I didn't know there was a Russell Crowe Robin Hood version. I thought that was someone else.
No, of course, in the 90s, there was the one with Kevin Costner.
Yes, that was who I was thinking of.
And then I don't know what year the Russell Crowe one was. It was, you know, 5-6 years ago, whatever. Anyway, I started watching, and I couldn't get very far with it, Ben. Not because it's, you know, visually, it's a very good film. It's a very visually impressive. But I tell you the thing that I couldn't quite get to grips with, and it started to spoil it for me, is Russell Crowe's accent.
Oh, okay. Was it that off-putting?
Oh, it's awful. Now, I was trying to think, where's the Robin Hood story based mainly? It's Nottingham, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Nottingham's kind of the Midlands. I'm not expecting like a full-on Brum accent. I'd expect to hear maybe a little Midlands twang to the voice.
You're right, I'm Robin Hood.
Or steal from the rich and give to the poor. I'm riding through the glen. So anyway, I want to play you a little clip from the film, and I'd like you to see if you can place the accent. I will warn you, just be careful what you say.
Okay.
I'll explain why.
Am I going to get cancelled?
Just think about what you're saying when you try and sum up the accent. But have a quick listen to Russell Crowe's Robin Hood.
You're trying to build for the future. You must set your foundation strong. The laws of this land enslave people to its king. A king who demands loyalty but offers nothing in return. I have marched from France to Palestine and back. And I know in tyranny lies only failure. You build a country like you build a cathedral, from the ground up.
There's a little clip of Russell Crowe. Can you place the accent?
No, I can't. It's a wandering accent.
Wandering is the word I would use, yes.
Yeah, I got hints of Mancunian. I got hints of Scottish. It just seemed to go all over the shop.
There's a bit of Irish in there, I thought.
Yes. If Robin Hood had had a bit of a troubled childhood and had been moved across the country a lot from school to school because he kept getting expelled, and he just sort of picked up various northern accents. Yeah.
Well, I was getting so annoyed by this accent that I looked online to see whether other people had said things in the past about it. Now, I must have seen this story when the film first came out, because it appears it was big news.
Okay. What were you worried I was going to say, by the way?
Well, I'm just going to tell you, because he gets very upset. I'm not saying that he would be listening to this podcast, but he walked out of a Radio 4 interview when his accent was brought up. He just thought, I'm not going to talk about my accent. I'm gone. Not doing it. And Fair then, enough. Now let me tell you this. He has, since the film came out, because there has been much towards criticism about his accent, he has explained, and this shows an actor of real depth here, Ben, because he's explained the story behind the accent.
Oh, he's been method acting. Okay. Yeah,
right. So what he said was the child was born in Barnsley. On his father's death, he was taken to France at the age of 6, travelled across Europe to the Middle East on foot. He fought in the Third Crusade for Richard I, alongside men from all parts of Britain, Ireland, and France, and returned to England a man in his 40s. So it is a wandering accent.
If I was being pulled apart on my inability to pull off an accent, I would definitely try and say that, oh yes, the character I'm playing, his accent's all over the place.
Of course you would. Yeah, no, of course there's bits of Scottish and Irish, and because yeah, he travelled around. I mean, I can't do accents, and whenever I do an accent, they do tend to wander. But I'm not, you know, an actor commanding millions of pounds for playing huge roles. Anyway, I then stopped watching Robin Hood because I got into a rabbit hole about accents. So I want to share with you some of my favourites.
Okay, this sounds good.
I mean, we need to start with Dick Van Dyke, don't we? That's where we need to go back to. Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins playing a Cockney.
I'm a bit uncomfortable with knocking the living legend that is DVD. let's go and take it easy on him, shall we?
Okay, well, just remind yourself of his accent.
All right, ladies and gents.
Ooh,
comical poem, suitable for the occasion, extemporized and thought up before your very eyes. All right, here we go. Room in for everyone, gather around. The constable's responsible. Now, how does that sound?
Now, the constable's responsible. What is that?
I don't know. It does sound a bit like he's chewing on a wasp's nest.
I mean, who taught him that accent? Who said, oh, yes, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine, Dick. Do that. It's no problem. But what I will say about the living legend that is Dick Van Dyke, I recently at Christmas saw Mary Poppins Returns, or The Return, whatever it's called, and he plays a little cameo in it towards the end. And at 90... whatever he was when this film was made, he can still dance and jump up on a desk.
Oh, he's as dexterous as they come. He's got a spring in his step.
Well, he's married to a very young woman, comparatively.
How young?
I think she's only in her 40s.
Jesus Christ, really?
Yes, and no wonder he's got a spring in his step.
So when he was, so I don't want to get gross, but when he was 50, she was being born.
Yes, yes.
That's gross.
I mean, no, but I mean, obviously when they met, he was probably in his late 80s. She would have been in her early 40s, whatever it was.
No, I'm completely convinced that she found him attractive for his charming personality and rugged good looks. Nothing to do with his bank account at all.
Nothing to do with the royalties from Chim Chimney.
We are such a cynical pair of old bitches, aren't we?
Right, next one. Now, this is from a film I'd never heard of. It's called On Deadly Ground. Ever heard of that film?
I can't say I have. No, I'm not the biggest film buff in the world, but I haven't heard of that one either.
Anyway, Michael Caine is in it. Now, I love Michael Caine. I'm a massive Michael Caine fan.
The thing about Michael Caine is everyone thinks they can do a very convincing Michael Caine impression, and rarely can anyone.
Should we try? Can you do a Michael Caine impression?
No, I can't. But I'm well-rounded enough to admit that I can't. No, I can't. I can give it a go, if you'd like.
Yeah, go on. Go on, give it a go.
You are only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
Yeah.
I told you, it's a bit shit.
Yes.
So is everyone's.
I mean, I could try if you want.
Go ahead.
To do the same phrase.
Yeah.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
Unusual pause there after blow.
Yeah. It's you've got to get the right rhythm.
Yeah. You're putting your own spin on it. I like it.
What do you know? Everyone knows
the line is, you're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. No one's ever done that.
You've turned into something really weird there. You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
That was my Dick Van Dyke does Michael Caine.
Reg Varney from On the Buses.
But you gave this unusual, you're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. Yeah. It's weird, the weirdest pause.
Well, and there might be a pause in it. Do you know the original well enough to know that there isn't a pause in it?
I don't think I've ever seen The Italian Job, but I've heard it quoted enough to know that no one ever pauses there.
I think it's more dramatic with a pause there, and I could feel Michael Caine almost possessing me as I did it.
I think I've proved my point.
The bloody door's off.
I think I've proved my point that no one can do a convincing Michael Caine.
So anyway, I'm a big Michael Caine fan. I'm a big Michael Caine fan.
But you're a big fan of the Michael Caine dramatic pause. That's what you're a big fan of.
I do like a big dramatic pause. What's the line from, what's the other famous line from Zulu?
Oh, I don't know. Is it, my name is Michael Caine.
And not a lot of people know that.
I think you've coined your own thing here. The Michael Caine unnecessary dramatic pause.
But that's how he talks. He always puts.
He does a bit.
He always puts some little pauses in. That's how he gets his dramatic moments in it, doesn't he?
Perhaps I'm not quite sold on that one, but yes, on with the shitty accents.
Don't throw those bloody spears at me. So anyway, I don't know if he actually ever said that line.
Well, he has now,
but that's what I was thinking of. Anyway, in this film. I don't know whether he's trying to do an American accent. I don't really know what's going on with this.
Now you know why I love this woman. Amend the settlement as you see fit. What's the position on Aegis One?
I went a little bit Irish towards the end, I felt.
Well, I've got another little example from this film. This time he's a bit more angry. And I think he kind of forgets. If he's trying to do a little American thing, I think he sort of forgets halfway through.
God damn it, we have 13 days!
We already have two crews working full-time.
Then put on a third crew! Why is this so hard for you to understand? Get out!
Sir,
I don't give a shit! Now let me explain.
You look 10 years younger.
Get out!
I'm still getting Irish. I'm getting very strong Ian Paisley vibes from him.
Ian Paisley?
Yeah, I don't
give a shit. You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off!
I know this, by the way, full respect, you even still put the Michael Caine unnecessary pause in there.
That's how he says it.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. Fucking amazing.
Don't throw those spears at me.
Sorry, by the way, you're being completely racist. I'm half Northern Irish. I'm allowed to laugh at this. You're not.
Oh, I'm not allowed to do the accent. Even if, can I say, I thought it was quite a good Northern Irish
It was
Irish
very
accent.
Good. One of your bare ones. You can put that on the CV.
I find myself, this is another little verbal tick of mine that I would admit to. And I seem to be admitting to more and more of these. By talking about them, I seem to realise I've got more and more of them. But if anyone who is Northern Irish is on the telly, I will start doing an Ian Paisley shouting voice.
Ulster says no.
But I'll also put in the swear. I put in swearing because I always think it should. I think Ian Paisley should have probably sworn more because he had such anger that it was almost like it needed swearing to happen. So I do that quite a lot.
I've been recently converted into watching a Scottish comedy called Still Game that my wife adores. She loves it.
Okay.
And they swear like nobody else swears. The Scots have such a fantastic way of speaking.
Mm.
It just lends itself to comedy so brilliantly. No one swears like the Scots swear. It's incredible.
I think that's true. I think there is a great Scottish, I don't know what it is, whether it's just the way it rolls off the Scottish tongue. I don't know. Anyway, I want to stay in Ireland for the next couple of clips. Ever seen the film Far and Away?
I don't think so, no.
This was a film probably from the mid-90s with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, and they play Irish immigrants into America kind of, I guess, in the 1800s, something like that. And I loved this film at the time. I think partly because I had a bit of a thing about Nicole Kidman.
Okay.
So I was able to excuse any terrible accents. But as I've got older, if I ever see the film, well, have a listen yourself. This is the first bit I'm going to play you is Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise having a conversation. This isn't Northern Irish. We're not going back there, Ben. This is more of the little southern Irish voice we're going to do. And I think Tom Cruise does go full leprechaun.
Oh, no.
Ammunition.
Shannon, all chests are equal in the eyes of the Lord. She goes into the confession box. She'll never come out, the little tramp.
Grace isn't a tramp. She's a dancer in the Burly Cue.
That isn't dancing. That's kicking her knickers up. And I suspect if you asked her to, she'd kick her knickers off.
Oh, she'd kick her knickers off for you.
That's absolutely terrible.
I mean, when I do my cod Irish accent, that's what I do.
Brad Pitt in Snatch does a very good Irish accent.
Does he?
Oh, God, I'm going to wander down a very... I've got to be careful here. He plays a character from the travelling community.
Right.
And he does a very good Irish accent, which goes along with that. One of the lines which I often will shout out loud, like a little verbal tick, is they sell a caravan, which is very dodgy, and the wheels fall off. And the people who've purchased the caravan want to return it.
Right.
And... he's saying, well, why would I want to buy this caravan back? But the line he gives is, why the fuck do you want a caravan that's got no fucking wheels? Which is, why the fuck do I want a caravan that's got no fucking wheels? Yeah. And I find myself screaming that quite a lot. Yeah.
When you say screaming it, like, where are you screaming it?
It's a bit of a silly one. Like, whenever someone tries to give you something that you clearly don't want.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a salesman might phone up the house and try and sell me some bullshit insurance.
What? You're shouting that.
Why the fuck do you want a caravan that's got no fucking wheels? Yeah.
And you'll say that to someone who phones you.
Makes me feel better.
That's amazing.
They've got no idea what I'm talking about.
But I like the fact you shout it. It's a bit like when I do my Northern Irish thing. I do shout, and sometimes I get a bit carried away. And I think, I wonder if the neighbours can hear me just shouting obscenities in a Northern Irish accent.
Well, I do think that the Irish, both Northern and Southern, are very passionate people. Mm. And that the accent is at its most powerful when delivered with a bit of oomph.
But then I think the sort of Southern Irish accent, I would say it's more soft normally, isn't it? Sort of soft and lilting.
Yeah, Northern Irish is quite harsh.
Quite harsh. And your fucking face, Ben.
I mean, that was half Northern Irish, half pirate, to be fair.
Yeah.
Avast, ye matey. I will not talk to Sinn Féin.
Do you want to hear one more Tom Cruise?
Yeah, let's do it.
Foot on angry leprechaun.
Tell me you like my hat.
You're not wearing a hat.
Say it. Say you like my hat.
You're not wearing a hat.
Say it. Why can't you say it, Shannon? Why can't you say you like my hat? Why can't you say you like my suit? I've earned this.
I mean, it's almost like he is a leprechaun.
Tell me you like me hat.
Like me hat and my little suit. Tell me you like it.
Right. Next one I want to play here.
You got more.
Keanu Reeves, this is. This is only a short clip. This is Keanu Reeves from the film Dracula. I think he's just trying to do a sort of educated English accent.
Okay.
Of course, sir. I'll attend to the count. Thank you for your confidence.
This is a great opportunity for you, Harker.
Yes, of course, sir. If I may inquire, what in fact happened to Mr. Renfield in Transylvania?
It's very soft, if I may inquire.
Yeah, and I'm not sure any English person would pronounce it Transylvania.
Just have a listen to the last bit again here, Ben.
If I may inquire, what in fact happened to Mr. Renfield in Transylvania?
Yeah, but he says, what in fact happened? It rang a bell for me. A bell.
The fam rat.
Just... what? What may a man...
What in fact happened?
The wham rat. Right, next one I want to play you. Nicolas Cage in Captain Corelli's Mandolin, doing an Italian accent. I mean, he's fully taking the piss here, I think.
If I do that, I'll start getting confused about when I'm supposed to come in. And that, in a concert hall, would be a disaster.
Yeah, he's putting a lot of sauce on that accent, isn't he?
What a mistake to make. So ridiculous.
It's-a me, Mario. Yeah, it's a bit far, that one.
When's your Domino Day? Right, last ones I want to play you. This is another film that was completely ruined for me. Completely ruined for me. It's a film called Green Street.
Oh, I've heard of that.
It's like a football hooligan film.
Yes.
It stars Charlie Hunnam, who's a really good actor. He's like a big Hollywood actor now. Now, he is an Englishman. I know not a Londoner by birth. I think he was born in Newcastle.
Right.
He's playing a member of the West Ham firm, right?
Okay, that's quite a specific accent.
Yeah. Just listen to this.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Mate, I think you should get on the next train and fuck off out of here.
He's like Dick Van Dyke again. So it gets worse.
I'll stay out the way. It's not like we didn't have it last night.
Now that's very Australian. Gone completely Oz there.
I'll stay out the way. It's not like we didn't have it last night.
Well, like we didn't have it last night.
It's not like we didn't have it last night.
We didn't have it last night, mate.
Yeah.
Final clip from him.
Today we have an extraordinarily distinguished guest. Mr. Buckner is an American who went to the finest university in the United States. Mr. Buckner will be goalie for the away colours.
Be goalie. He'll be goalie for the away colours.
Yeah, that isn't how anyone speaks in this country. Trey, for one story I saw this week that I thought was really taking the piss was the you're aware that of the energy crisis happening in this country.
Of course.
And in only a matter of, I don't know, months, years, we'll all see our bills rocketing to almost unaffordable levels for certain people.
Yes.
But some companies have come up with what they think are solutions to this problem.
Well, it's very helpful. I mean, I've told you before, my electricity company bombard me with demands for me to get a smart meter in. Is it that sort of advice? Get a smart meter, you can save some money that way? Is that sort of thing?
No, it's much more patronising, offensive, piss-taking, and it's something some far too rich toff in a boardroom has thought up and hasn't really thought about how it will land with the customers.
Okay.
So E.ON, for example, have been blasted, according to the news recently, because they have decided to send out pairs of socks to their customers.
Send out socks?
Yes, because you're going to be cold, so here's a pair of socks. Wow. You cretins.
Who came up with... Oh, well, we know the sort of person who's come up with that idea. We've sat in meetings with people like that, where they go, oh, here's an idea, yeah. Because they're not going to be able to afford to keep their houses warm, these little old ladies. They're not going to be able to afford it. So why don't we send them some socks? And I bet they're fucking branded. Are they branded?
Yeah, of course. There's a little sun on the logo, and it's about energy efficiency. And yeah, we can keep them happy. They'll love that. Keep them warm. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
That isn't even the worst.
Okay.
OVO, who are the third largest energy supplier in this country, have apologised to customers after they gave out... They didn't even give them socks. They gave them advice.
Was it helpful advice, at least?
You tell me. Cuddle your pets to keep warm.
Cuddle your pets.
Do housework. They'll keep you warm, you plebs. Avoid putting the heating on. That's helpful.
Brilliant.
Really helpful.
Yeah.
There was other advice. They said, serious, you think I'm making this up. They said, try cleaning the house.
Man.
It gets worse, mate. It gets worse. Challenge the kids to a hula hoop contest.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
Leave your oven door open after you finish cooking.
Yeah.
Or...
Gas yourself.
Or do a few star jumps.
So these old
that'll,
ladies...
That'll burn some calories and keep you warm.
These old ladies that can't afford to keep their houses warm, they should all do star jumps.
Yeah, these old ladies who probably have had a hip replacement and can't get off the sofa, they should be doing jumping jacks for these fucking energy companies. Yeah. It's outrageous.
Who came up with this list and thought, yeah, here's a good idea? I mean, I'm not saying that they're bad ideas, but they're not ideas that an energy company should be handing out as advice to customers who can't afford to keep their houses warm.
Well, I mean, they're factually correct. Hugging your pet will give you a bit of warmth. Doing
so,
star
burning
jumps.
Them. Throwing a kitten on the fire.
Doing star jumps will keep you warm. Cleaning the house will keep you warm. But is it something that you should be saying to elderly, infirm people who are just going to be sitting there thinking, well, I should be doing star jumps to keep warm this winter.
God.
It's not really incredible that I can happily believe someone was dumb enough to dream this up.
Of course.
But what astounds me is that it got to the point of publication and no one in the chain of command said to them, no, mate, don't do that. That's taking the fucking piss.
I've never worked for a huge corporation like some of these businesses are, right? So I've never worked in that sort of environment. But I imagine, to take us back to where we started, it is very much like cabinet ministers supporting Boris Johnson. You work for one of these energy companies. You are in the big board meeting with the directors. But because the big boss sits there and says, yeah, I've got this idea. I've come up with this list of things that we can send out to our customers. None of them, because they'll probably be out on their fucking ears, none of them go, do you know what? I don't think that's a very good idea. Because although I didn't work for a big corporation, I did once work for a radio station where the big boss, who was just such an arsehole, right? He called us all into a meeting one day. All of us presenters were all sitting in this meeting, and he said, I mean, of course, I could train monkeys to do what you do. So I really want you to tell me to justify your positions. And you sit there and you think, like, I want to say, you fucking moron. You come in and do a show for 4 hours a day. You know, I'm not saying it's the hardest job in the world. It's not. It's not coal mining. It's not being a nurse or a doctor. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
But you can't say anything because he once, we had this guy, he was on The Breakfast Show, a lovely, lovely guy, Campus Christmas, right? Campus Christmas. And this big boss came in one day and the presenter, as you would to anyone, went, hello, darling. The next thing, he's hauled into the office by the station manager, who's been commanded by this, the owner of the place, that that was unacceptable. And unless that presenter writes a letter of apology for addressing him as darling,
fuck off.
He would be fired.
Fuck off.
This is how the world runs, Ben. This is how the world runs, and it's a concern to me.
But it doesn't work because, of course, I'm imagining these big energy companies have now had this massive justified backlash, and they're going to haul all these yes men into an office meeting and say, why did none of you fucking tell me this was a shit idea?
It's a bit like when they did, you know, when they relaunched Coke, new Coke, was it in the 80s? And it was an absolute disaster. You know, whoever came up with the idea of new Coke, I bet when it came to it and they had the meeting afterwards, they said, well, why didn't any of you say that new Coke was a bad idea? So, because you're Mr. Coke. I'm not going to be saying to Mr. Coke, new Coke shit. So there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, a couple of recommendations for you. First of all, this is a TV series that I have revisited. So I don't know if they still make new ones or not. River Monsters.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, it's brilliant. It's on, I think they're on the ITV Hub, as it's called. And it's this guy called Jeremy Wade. He hears stories of horror stories of people being attacked and sometimes killed by things under the water. And he goes and searches to see if he can discover what this creature is.
Okay.
I watched one the other day where they think, they can never prove it 100%, but he thinks that people have been killed by an octopus.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. I was a huge fan as a little boy of the late great Steve Irwin, who was tragically killed by possibly the most placid thing. Imagine the irony of that. He would wrestle with crocodiles and alligators, and he was killed by a stingray.
Yeah,
possibly the most placid thing in the sea.
We say the most placid thing in the sea. Yeah, we assume that they're placid. The thing is, they've got that weapon on them.
Children can go to shit water parks and stroke stingrays in a little 3-foot pond. They're harmless, generally.
You've got to remember, they're still a member of the shark family, aren't they, a stingray?
Stingrays?
They are members of the shark family.
Well, I'm not going to embarrass myself by disagreeing with you, but...
Well, now you've got me down to myself, but I'm sure that...
The stingrays and sharks, are you sure?
I'm sure they're a member of
I can hear the slight delay in your voice while you start frantically Googling to try and prove me wrong.
I'm looking at it now. They are related to sharks.
Okay.
There we are. That's put my mind at rest. I knew that information was correct. So, you know, they have got that. They are predators. They have got a defence mechanism. So, yes, children can go and stroke them in a little pool in a park where it's all very closely controlled. They're not getting in with them.
I think even if you did get in with stingrays, you'd be pretty much fine.
Oh, okay. All right.
I would. I'd get in with stingrays.
Would you? Okay.
Yeah, it was a freak accident. I still don't like talking about it.
No. But I think you'd have to know... I don't think you could just go and swim without any idea of the stingray. I think that would be a very foolish thing to do. You know, Steve Irwin knew about stingrays, and yes, it was a freak accident. If I was to go swimming with a stingray, I'd want to know where I could... It's like when you go and see a horse. You know you don't stand behind the horse. That's where the danger is, although they can bite as well. But, but in general, you don't stand behind the horse, do you?
No. No, so you stand to the side.
You know that bit of information. So I'd want to know the same information about a stingray if I was to go and swim with it. I was going, where does that spine come from? Where do I not want to be anywhere near?
So I'm guessing this guy isn't really discovering new species. He's just uncovering surprising ways you could die.
But he catches some incredible fish. It's an amazing, amazing program. So I'm very much enjoying revisiting those. Really.
Okay.
And the other thing I want to recommend is on Netflix. It's called Death to 2021. I don't know if you remember last year, they did Death to 2020. It's produced and co-written by Charlie Brooker.
Yes, I started to watch it and I was enjoying it, but I got a bit disappointed, I must be honest, because I kind of forgot what it was supposed to be. I thought it was going to be a yearly wipe by Charlie Brooker.
Right.
Which I love. So I was a little bit disappointed to realise it wasn't that. But then again, it's still very good.
Well worth a watch. And just one other thing I would just want to mention. Do you remember last week that we ended up talking about the Loch Ness Monster?
Yes, we did, yeah.
But I ended up watching just the end of a programme that was on Channel 5, I think it was, this week. I don't even know what the programme was called. But I caught it just at the end when they were talking about Loch Ness. And they may have... an answer to the Loch Ness mystery.
Is it no?
But it's not an animal. what they've discovered through huge scientific research is that if a boat goes through the lock, you know, you get the wake from the boat and waves are created.
Yes.
Well, the weird way that the lock is in terms of its shape and its structure means that these waves can sort of last a long time and bounce back. And from a certain angle, the way these waves look, they can look like a sort of beast on the top of the water. So even you can look at the lock and see not a boat anywhere in sight, and suddenly this disturbance on the water, it could be that.
So the breaking news on our podcast is the Loch Ness Monster doesn't exist.
Possibly.
I need to throw in a... What do they do in newspapers when they get something wrong? A correction and apology. Last week I recommended the BBC podcast The Coming Storm.
Oh, yes.
But I got the rollicking of a lifetime off my dad, because he was the one that recommended it to me, and he was very affronted that I didn't give him the credit he deserved for recommending it on the podcast. So, yes, apologies to Big Jeff.
Yeah, well, Pa Harmer, thank you very much for the for the information and apologies that you have this sort of snake of a son that just rips all goodness from you and claims it as his own.
It's a bit harsh.
So there we are, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime on Twitter. We're at Trevor and Ben, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.